Well, this is my fourth message now in my sermon series, Bold Beginnings, being the fourth Sunday in Advent, and we are rejoicing in our journey towards Bethlehem and towards the Christ cradle. Flowers and Candles is the title of my message for us this morning, and I want to share with you an alleged New Year's letter that was written from a church member to the pastor. And it goes as follows. Dear Pastor, you often stress attendance at worship as being very important for the Christian, but I think a person has a right to miss now and then. I think every person ought to be excused for the following reasons and for the following number of times per reason. Christmas holidays, the Sunday before and after, that's two excused absences. New Year's, the party lasted too long, one excused absence. Easter, well, that's time to get away for the holidays, two excused absences. July the 4th, a national holiday, one. Labor Day, need to get away, two. Memorial Day, visit the hometown folk, one excused absence. School closing, the kids need a break, that's one. School reopens, one last fling, another one. Family reunions, my wife's and mine, that's another three. Sleep late, stayed up too long on Saturday night, that's nine excused absences. Deaths in the family, two. Anniversary, second honeymoon, one. Sickness, one per family member, five excused absences. Business trip, it's a must, I've got to take it, one excused absence. Vacation, 3 to 4 weeks, well, let's take six absences for that. Bad weather, ice, snow, rain, well, maybe even a cloudy day, two for that. Ball games, two. Bengals games, two. Unexpected company, can't walk out on them, two more. Time changes, you know, we get those in the spring and in the fall. That's two excused absences. Specials on TV like the Super Bowl, etc. That's three excused absences. Well, Pastor, that leaves us two Sundays per year that we can attend. So you can count on us being in church on the fourth Sunday in February and the third Sunday in August, unless we are providentially hindered. Sincerely, a faithful member. Well, if this happens to be one of your two Sundays, I am so glad that you are here. If I were to retitle this sermon for today, I might call it How Light Transforms Lives or Transforms Us. I am hoping by now that you all have your Christmas trees up at home. Yes? How many of you do not have your Christmas tree? No, I'm just kidding you. I'm just kidding you. I won't ask for a show of hands. My mentor, now long retired, the Reverend C. Raymond Probst, who grew up on a farm in Maine, recalls how, as a child, he would go to bed on Christmas Eve with not one Christmas decoration all through the house. And they would go to sleep, go to bed, and on Christmas Day, when they woke up, the whole house would be bedecked and decorated, including the Christmas tree, which wasn't even up the night before on Christmas Eve, would be up and fully decorated for Christmas Day. Could you imagine what a surprise for a child? Can you imagine what an amazing amount of work that was for the parents? My goodness. But Ray loves to tell that story. I know that as Janet is getting ready to leave for work in the morning, She may only have 15 or 20 minutes for breakfast at 6 a.m., but before she's out the door, I like to make sure that the lights of the Christmas tree are on so that she can see them before she goes out and begins her hectic day. And presently, my parents, who many of you had met over the Thanksgiving break, who are here with us in worship, they're vacationing now in Mexico. Why? Well, it's probably the same reason that many of our parishioners head south to Florida for a few months every year. You see, there's a deep, innate need that human beings have to come closer to the light. Even our little Scottish terrier, can you guess his name? Scotty. That's right. He wants to get in on all of these warm December days that we're having too. And if you think it's cold now, wait till next week because it's going to warm right up. I think Christmas might even be 70 degrees. I'm not sure, you know. Perhaps a new record. And Scotty, you know, when the light comes streaming through the oval glass of our front door, he will find just the perfect little spot on the hallway floor to catch those rays of sun and to curl up in a little ball for his midwinter's nap. Who would think that light could change us all so profoundly? But it does. In the Bible, however, light is not just the light of day or sunlight, as the book of Genesis speaks about at creation. Rather, it speaks of light in a very specific and unique way. You see, God's light has a job to do. Light overcomes and dispels the darkness. The prologue of John's Gospel, which is one of my favorite prologues in the Bible, declares in him was life. And that life was the light of all humanity. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness, here's the important part, has not overcome it. You will know this to be true if you light the logs in your fireplace this winter. Well, there probably hasn't been too many opportunities for that. Or if you flip on the light switch of any room in your house. The light dispels the darkness. But John is speaking of a darkness that isn't just about throwing a Yuletide log on the fire or turning on Christmas bulbs on the front porch. John does something that is absolutely masterful. He locates God's light as residing within a singular human being, Jesus Christ. If there is any admonition at Christmas, it is, beware of how the world has hijacked the theme of light without locating it or honoring Jesus Christ, locating the light in Jesus. Oh my goodness. At Christmas, you will see light in Coca-Cola commercials, car commercials, Bud Light commercials, and on and on it goes, all devoid and divested of any reference to Christ. In our proposed vision statement, we declare that our purpose at St. John's is to be His light that transforms lives. In other words, we are His light, not for our own feel-good factor. There is a purpose to being His light, and that is to transform the lives of other people. Our singular focus as a congregation, then, is to ask that question over and over and over again. Are we transforming lives? Are we transforming lives by what we say, by what we do, by how we proclaim His good name? And so our ability to change the hearts and lives of those who are walking in the darkness, as Isaiah so eloquently says, is contingent upon us having His light living and dwelling within us. Have you got His light, my friends? Is His light, is His life dwelling within you? If not, now is the time to get it. Don't delay. Don't make Christmas just about gift giving. Take a hold of and appropriate His loving light in your life. I want you to notice something else that John does within his gospel. In one breath, he connects the life of Jesus with the light of Jesus. There it is. The text demands that we link those two things together. And so when we celebrate the light of Christ at Christmas, we are simultaneously celebrating the life of Christ, indeed, even His life within our hearts and lives. In Him was life, and that life, the text says, was the light of all humanity. As we roll out of 2015, I want to ask you, that's right, there's not much of 2015 that's left. I want to ask you a couple of questions. First, where have you experienced His light in your life over the course of this last year? Think about that. Where is it that you experience His light? And second, where have you experienced His life within this congregation where, as we like to say, great things are happening here at St. John's? What I mean by that is, where are the patches and the places in your life that needs God's penetrating light or that you have experienced over the last year? Where are those places? Can you name them? Can you think about them and in glorious gratitude around the quietness of your Christmas tree? The laws of physics tell us that light travels at a constant finite speed of 186,000 miles per second. A traveler moving at the speed of light circumnavigates the globe 7.5 times in one split second. Isn't that amazing? You see, physically, according to the God-given laws of nature, light moves so fast you can't even see its movement. The only thing that you can do with light, really, is experience it. Ah, the wonder. Oh, the warmth. Oh, now I can see. You know, there's a lot of debate about whether or not the universe is expanding. Kind of like our waistlines at Christmas time, you know? But there can be no debating the fact that light transforms us. Light is used in chemistry, in industry, in manufacturing, in medical research, in medical treatment, and so on and so forth. You know, lasers have revolutionized just about every part of our lives. And what are lasers? Light. Light touches us every day. And Jesus wants us to experience the same thing with Him. He says what? I am the light of the world. The phos. In the Greek, in the original languages, light is phos. It's from what we get our English cognate photography from. I am the phos of the world. What does that mean, that word mean in Greek? It means I make manifest. I reveal things that haven't been seen before. I show things to be what they truly are. I am the phos, the light of the world. You see, we really don't have anything to do with sunshine. Sunshine is a force of God's creation, which is outside the realm of man to control. It just happens. But the light of Christ is a power and force that we must consciously make our own. At Christmas, when you receive a gift under the tree, the giver wants to make their gift that they're giving to you. They want you to make their gift they're your own. Is it any different with faith? Jesus is the gift that the Father gives, and the Father wants you to make this gift of His Son, Jesus, your own. Our ability to have the light of Christ isn't just nilly-willy kind of parceled out to you and to me and to the world. Having the light of Christ depends upon the following. Isn't that what Jesus means when He says in today's text, whoever follows Me will never walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. You see, the wise men following the Christ star thing doesn't go away after Christmas. Absolutely not. What the wise men started, it was really a movement of people away from the darkness, pushing off from the darkness and heading towards His light. Is that the direction of your life? Which direction is your life moving in, towards His light, or are you walking in the darkness? I hope and pray it is towards and moving toward the light. I hope and pray that you're not like little Benji, you know. Brenda Gooding shares a story about her friend who decided to talk to her bright little four-year-old son with the name of Benji about receiving Christ Jesus into his heart. Benji, she asked quietly, would you like to receive Jesus into your heart? And Benji thought for a few moments, and then he rolled his blue eyes and he said, no, I don't think I want the responsibility. Didn't Jesus say, you are the light of the world, a town built on a hill cannot be hidden? Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl or a bushel. Instead, they put it on a stand so that it gives light to everyone within the house. That's our responsibility, to be His light. During Advent and beyond, it is our responsibility to be God's life and light in a world that is walking in the darkness. Amid the emotional carnage of the radical Islamic terror attack on Paris last month, a French reporter captured a small, almost inconsequential conversation that took place at the Palais de la République between a Parisian father and his son. Were it not caught on videotape, the world would have missed this small minute-and-a-half conversation. But before I share their conversation with you, I want to pause for a moment and I want us to think about the setting of this conversation as light overcame the darkness in Paris. At the center of the Place de la République is a 31-foot bronze statue of Marianne, the personification of the French Republic. Holding aloft an olive branch in her right hand and resting her left hand on a tablet engraved with the Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, passed by France's National Constituent Assembly in August 1789. It is their fundamental document of the French Revolution in the history of human and civil rights. The Declaration was directly influenced by our own Thomas Jefferson, who worked alongside of General Lafayette, who introduced this piece of document. Influenced also by the doctrine of natural light, the rights of man are held to be universal, valid at all times and in every place pertaining to human nature itself. The statue sits atop a monument which is 75 feet high. You saw this perhaps on the news. Marianne is surrounded by the three statues personifying liberty, equality, and fraternity, the values of the French Republic. And these statues evoke the three medieval theological themes of faith, hope, and love. And then also at the base of this statue is a lion that is guarding a ballot box, the power and the right of the people to vote. With this backdrop in mind, here is the conversation between the reporter, the father, and his son as they attempted to come to terms with the heinous crimes of a dark religion that befell upon their wonderful city of light. And the conversation went viral. The reporter says to the little boy, do you understand what happened here? Do you understand why these people did this? Little boy, yes, because they're really, really mean. Bad guys are not very nice. And we need to be careful because we have to change houses. And the father says, oh no, don't worry. We don't need to move out, stroking his son's head. France is our home. The son says, but there's bad guys, Daddy. And the father says, yes, but there's bad guys everywhere. And the son says, they have guns. They can shoot us because they're really, really mean, Daddy. And the father says, it's okay. They might have guns, but we have flowers. And there's a pause, and the son says, but flowers, says the son, but flowers don't do anything. Therefore, and the father interrupts him, and he says, of course they do, pointing over to the flowers. He says, look, everyone is putting flowers, and the son looks over to the flowers. And the father says, it's to fight against the guns. And the son says, it's to protect. We, exactly. The father says, and the son says, and the candles too? And the father says, yes, it's to remember the people who are gone yesterday. Oh, says the little boy, the flowers and the candles are here to protect us. We, says the father, and the reporter says, to the son, do you feel better now? We, yes, I feel better now. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Amen.